Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Lob podcast with These Football Times with me, Aidan Williams, as we celebrate the release of another magazine today. And in a slight change of tack, we've moved away from a club edition that we've been doing the last few magazines, and temporarily anyway, to focus on a player who we'll be discussing in this pod. Before we get to that player, I'll just introduce my my fellow conspirators this evening who will be talking the talk with me about this fantastic player. First of all, Gary Thacker, our man in Spain. How you doing over there, Gary?
I'm good, thanks, matey, and happy to be on board and talk about our new mag. And yeah, I mean, the player we're going to talk about today is probably one of the most iconic players in recent football history. So the mag is going to sell it massively quickly, and delighted to be on board and talking about this guy.
Absolutely so. And also with us this evening is Stephen Scragg. How you doing there, Stephen?
We're all right, Aidan. I mean, what can you say about this player? But we'll find plenty to say about this player in the next hour or so. There's just so much. It's one of those that's like wordy stars, and you know, there's just so much about him. And I think one of the wonderful things about it is that, you know, this one's going to take a few people by surprise, because going off the Twitter feed and people guessing, that brilliant guessing game that people are put through for a week or so before the reveal is dropped, you know, I've got it so wrong. So many have gotten so wrong. it's that slightly distorted zero that looks like a six that has just totally thrown everyone.
Yeah, let's face it, there's far more wrong than right in the guesses for that, but it's always entertaining to read. So hopefully they're not disappointed when they see who it is, and they won't be
disappointed. No, this
not at all.
You know, what a player, you know. I think you know, this the great thing about this player is that he crosses so many boundaries of generation as well. You know, he's unusual in respect. He speaks to the kids of the 80s, he speaks to the 90s. You know, cabal and even into the millennials as well. You know, he just crosses so many boundaries.
He certainly does. And speaking of crossing boundaries, we're going even more international tonight. We've got our man in Russia, Andrew Flint, who hasn't been on the pod for a few years, but is a regular contributor still nonetheless, and features in this magazine. How are you doing there, Andrew?
I'm doing great, Aidan. Thank you so much for inviting me on. It's like you say, it's been a while, but what a way to come back to talk about this player. I mean, I think there are very few icons that transcend so many areas as this guy, and that's what fascinated me so much. I'm delighted to be asked to write this feature, and I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about him too, and so will everybody else. It's going to be wonderful.
Quite so. Well, I'm sure it's not a secret by the time this pod comes out, but we pretend it is at the start of these. It's always entertaining to do so. But we're talking about one of the greatest, as the guys have said, most revered, iconic players, principally of the 90s. But as Stephen said, he transcends that a little bit. His name evokes images of quality, grace, sheer talent, individualism as well. We're talking about Il Cordino Divino, if I can say it in a northeastern accent, it probably doesn't sound quite right. The divine ponytail, Roberto Baggio. He was a hero for many, particularly, I guess, with the football Italia generation, but also for his exploits in the 1990, 94 and 98 World Cups, and for a whole series of clubs that he graced in quite a fascinating career. The magazine, to get this in at the start, obviously, as we always say, it sells out very, very fast. It will be out by the time this pod does. So if you're hearing this and you haven't ordered it yet, get on and do so. And also, there is another release going alongside it, which is another popular reprint of the Netherlands magazine from a few years back. So anyone who's missed that in their collection or wants to add to their collection, get on that as well. But to kick things off then, Gary, coming to you first, we're talking Roberto Baggio. Just what is it about about this player, about Roberto Baggio, that warrants this treatment? You know, we've only given this treatment to one other individual so far at these football times, and that was Diego Maradona not so long ago. And we've discussed various players that might come next or might feature in the future. What is it about Roberto Baggio that has got him this treatment ahead of some others?
I mean, that's a great question, Aidan. And, you know, on the conversations we have in the TFT group, we discuss various players who should be awarded, I mean, awarded accolades sounds a little bit pompous, but some players that we feel should be given this sort of representation of the magazine of their own.
And it's a career high, Gary, let's be honest.
It is. It absolutely is. It's career highs. Some people say the Ballon d'Or is a big thing, but, you know, to have the TFT magazine devoted to you is a far better accolade than the Ballon d'Or. What is that sort of thing? Anyway, but you know, we've discussed other players, but I think the thing about Baggio is he's the sort of player that everybody respects, admires, wants to watch, wants their team to play, wants this guy to play for their team. He's the almost the archetypal Italian Fantasia player. He's the guy that performs the magic, he's the guy that gets fans on the edge of their seats. He's the one who makes you happy. He's the one who delivers joy. He's the one who delivers exaltation and exhilaration. A true artist of football.
Well, there can be no greater accolade than that. And that is why you get this treatment, isn't it? So, Stephen, coming to you on this theme, I mean, Gary's talking there, he's the guy who delivers the joy. He's the one who's the artist, the creator, and so on, the fantasista and all of that. Was he, therefore, Baggio, was he a little more akin perhaps to some of the stars of the 80s in terms of number 10s, I guess, I'm meaning here. So Platini, Laudrup, Francescoli, Maradona, of course. You know, a more individualist number 10, perhaps, rather than the cog in a machine, which was how the game was going during Baggio's era.
Yeah, completely. You know, he's the player that transcends the two eras. You know, he takes that spirit of the 1980s and you know, and before that, really. You know, he's the last of a dying breed in many ways. You know, you only have to look at Carlo Ancelotti's reluctance to take him on at Parma, for instance, because of the way that the sands have shifted by the later 1990s. So, you know, it's that element that he becomes the outsider, but, you know, he represents a type of footballer that is being eradicated from the game in so many respects. You know, he is the player that carries the torch, you know, for as long as he can. And the fact that, you know, he outlives the 1990s and into the new millennium, there's just something wondrous about him. And it's the fluctuations in his career as well that are so you know, fascinating as well. You know, you're looking at a contemporary in another sport, you'd say he was like the footballing version of Andre Agassi, in the way that, you know, he came in waves. You know, he excelled, he ebbed away, he came back again, and you think he's finished. You know, there's a Muhammad Ali aspect to it. You know, he's been cited as being finished three or four times. You know, even all the way up to the 2002 World Cup, there was this massive kind of groundswell of opinion that he should be going that was resisted by Trapattoni, the McLavellian kind of, you know, snidely whiplash in a way. You know, we always like to bring him in, but Dick Dastardly in that respect. You know, he just refused to take him to Japan and Korea, you know. But the fact that longevity was there from such a position of vulnerability, of fragility, you know, in his early career, there's just so many fascinating layers about Baggio, and it's the metamorphosis of him from all of those different clubs. And there's not many players like him in that respect. You know, as we've said, we looked at other players, and, you know, I'm sure some of them will still come in other magazines. But, you know, Baggio had, you know, so many, you know, chapters to his career. You know, through all the clubs he played for, the various comings and goings of his international career and through to Andrew's legacy on him. You know, this just felt like one of the most natural magazines for us to make.
And on that theme, Andrew, Stephen's talking there about the number of clubs Baggio played for. And obviously that's, I'm kind of wondering, is that a reason why he's sort of universally loved, not just globally, but I guess in Italy too? Because, yeah, he's played for all the big teams, but he's also played for a number of smaller ones, you know, Bologna, Brescia, and so on, later in his career, as well as others at the start. Is this a reason? So he's not sort of linked in anyone's mind to just one team. Is that part of the allure of him? And does this affect his appeal and mean he was a bit of a uniting character, perhaps, in Italy?
Well, I think the uniting character is a very, very key point to make about what makes Baggio so special. He was loved and he should have been hated, but he wasn't by so many. When he left Fiorentina, the literal riots in the streets, joining Juventus, crossing the Milan divide. And yet, I think there is an element that says when he thrived, arguably at his brightest, I would say was towards the end of his career at Bologna and Brescia in particular. And I think that is what resonates with a lot of people because, you know, when you put global superstars on the biggest stage, it's almost expected that they succeed. Whereas with Baggio, like you mentioned, the fluctuations of his career, not just in his fitness, in his access to the national team, in his appeal, it was simply the destinations he went to, the destinations he took people to. For me, I don't think many people could transcend so many tribal divides as Baggio did. He got rid of the notion of tribes altogether. Baggio, you love him. There is nobody who could possibly hate him. And I think that's what really sets him apart from so many. And like you say, a natural person to focus the greatest honour any footballer could have, which is an individual These Football Times magazine dedicated to him. Now, in all seriousness, though, there is nobody like him. There is nobody.
I wonder if Arrigo Sacchi might be the one person who isn't so keen on him, but we might get onto that.
Possibly.
Well, before we go too far, I'll just mention what some of the other articles in the magazine are before we get into the themes that that those of us on the pod have written about. So there's some going back to the early days and his rise and then coming through at Vicenza and then Fiorentina. There's focuses on 1990 and 94 World Cup specifically, and then Juventus, Milan, Bologna, Inter, Brescia, and then finally his legacy overall, which is one that Andrew has written. So there's the whole gamut is covered there. I mean, the early years, of course, we mentioned it initially there in terms of the move from Fiorentina to Juventus. Now, obviously, he rose to prominence at Fiorentina, took them to European finals. And that controversial move to Juventus, though, this was just before the 1990 World Cup, Gary, wasn't it? You know, this is, in terms of Fiorentina, anyway, that's pretty much the worst destination anyone could choose to go to when he's the club icon. You know, they loathe Juventus. They can't stand them, and their great idol is gone. This is just prior to the World Cup. Then Italy, their training base prior to the World Cup is Fiorentina's training base. So it causes practical riots outside, which can't be ideal preparation. But what I'm kind of wondering about this move, and obviously, you know, the article on these eras will go into depth around all of that. But do you think such a move, the fact that he was willing and able to do that, does it sort of indicate a certain strength of character, confidence that you need to become the type of player he became?
Yeah, that's a really good point, mate. I guess, you know, you get lots of players who are sent to great heights with club. They move from a small club to a big club. But this is a guy who moved from a big club to a big club to a big club to a big club. And then perhaps smaller clubs later in his career. But yeah, I think there was something perhaps inevitable that Baggio would play for Juve. At the time, perhaps the top club in Italy, and hugely successful there. in his time. And then, strangely enough, he got his position got usurped by a younger player as Del Piero came through, and the coaches at Juve decided that Lippi, that was the coach of Juve, so that perhaps a guy who was 6 or 7 years younger than Baggio was perhaps a better long-term proposition, and you know, and a decent decision. But the very fact that Baggio moved on to other clubs and excelled, and I sort of wrote an article about what happened after he left Juventus, just shows how great a talent this guy was. You know, Juve almost, strangely, I mean, it sounds a bit weird for a 28-year-old guy to be pensioned off, but almost he was, because Del Piero was decided to be the better option, the long-term option. And yet, you go to another club, you go to a great rival, and you prove them wrong, you prove the club wrong, you show them that they made a mistake. And the move from Fiorentina to Juve was different to that, in as much as it was almost inevitable, in as much as he was going to end up at one of the top clubs, and Juve was a club he ended up at. But the move after that to Milan just showed what a great talent this guy was.
Well, absolutely. I mean, he covered all the top clubs he possibly could in that country. But sticking at 1990 for the moment, Stephen, obviously the 1990 World Cup, you mentioned this move happened around that time. But that tournament saw him confirm, well, not emerge, but emerge internationally, I guess, in terms of being a real star. I mean, it's something I've been looking at a fair bit for my book on this theme. But that goal against Czechoslovakia, I mean, that was something truly special. That's what saw him become the hero of a nation, if you like, you know, through him and his ability. And yes, there was Scilacci, that story, but that was more by chance. That was more unexpected. Baggio was the one where the hopes were pinned, that the dream was sort of pinned on him to much extent. And that goal, that was where it emerged. It was the symbol of a new hope, a new generation, if you like, a new belief. Am I reading too much into it, or is that pretty much what it was?
No, the expectation behind Baggio was massive at the 1990 World Cup, and the fact that he started on the outside looking in, you know, just, I don't know, it accentuates that aspect of him being the outsider, because he wasn't typical of the Italian, you know, football psyche. You know, he was very much his own man. He didn't adhere to, you know, many other players that had passed before, you know, some wonderful Italian footballers, but, you know, none quite like Baggio. You know, he was so much his own man that, you know, you couldn't, you know, you get so many footballers that you can say, well, there's a little bit of A, B and C in the player, and you recognise those traits and who they've gained influence off, whether that's just as being a fan or, you know, being coached by them. Baggio was just Baggio. And to go into the 1990 World Cup, to you know, force his way into the side and say, look, you know, once he got there, he made himself completely indispensable, you know, to the point that, you know, when he wasn't there for the semi-final at the start, then, you know, it goes badly wrong for Italy in the end. You know, again, you know, you got to look at that World Cup and say, yes, it's not the Maradona 4 years earlier, but it's a World Cup that is still heavily dictated by Diego Maradona. Yeah, it's Baggio that provides the individual moment of the tournament with that goal against Czechoslovakia. The abiding individual moment of the 1990 World Cup has to be, you know, take away England and all of that, you know, Lineker with Gascoigne, that is a different, you know, side subject matter. You know, that's a completely different aspect. But when you're talking about what happens on the pitch and the play with a ball, it's that goal against Czechoslovakia. You know, to do that while everything that surrounds him is going off is phenomenal. You know, can't undersell just how volatile his life was at that point in time, in leaving Fiorentina for Juventus. And you know, Baggio being Baggio, you know, the stories that, you know, whenever he's interviewed, you know, you can have an interview with him and, you know, one story can have a completely different answer, you know, at the next interview from the same question. So, you know, his take on his move to Juventus was that he felt forced into it. You know, how true that is, we'll never know, because is it simply just something to defuse the Fiorentina fans? That iconic image of him, you know, going back for the first time in a Juventus shirt and picking up the Fiorentina flag, inflaming, you know, his new supporters, you know, that leaves this, you know, incredible, you know, he so many times he was backed into these corners that, you know, he should never have been able to fight his way out of. Yet he did. The strength of character is just phenomenal. And that's unusual for a player of such flair.
And that strength of character, I mean, the way he arrived at Juventus, it could have been easy for him, I guess, not to have settled there, for the fans of Juventus not to have fallen in love with him like everybody else did. But he was Italy's darling by this point, of course. As Stephen said there, the semi-final in the World Cup went wrong for, well, a whole number of reasons, but one of those was that Baggio wasn't involved for much of it. But Juventus then, Andrew, I mean, this is the club, to my mind anyway, possibly that he's most associated with, if you had to say there's one. I guess he had the longest spell of his career in one place. He had the best stats, I guess, if you want to look at it that way, in terms of what he produced. He moved on a number of times after this, but was never sort of fully tied to a club in people's mind. Is Juventus, therefore, his peak in terms of club career, before the lulls that Stephen mentioned before that then led to the rising again? Is Juventus peak Baggio?
You could answer that two ways. I mean, he picked up the Ballon d'Or while he was at Juventus. He's, like you mentioned, he scored, I believe, most of his goals at Juventus. But I personally don't see Juventus as the peak of Baggio. Because the thing about Baggio is he wasn't about the records and accolades. Although, it should be noted, if you think of epic goal scorers, statistics-wise, you don't normally gravitate towards Baggio. And yet, he was the sixth or seventh highest goal scorer still in Serie A history. This is a man who suffered horrific knee injuries. He missed right at the beginning of his career so long at Fiorentina when he first signed to them. And like you mentioned, he's chopped and changed. Not many players can cope so well consistently at performance levels when they're changing managers, system. Well, not necessarily systems, because he suffered with managers who didn't choose systems that fitted him so well. For me, the height of his career, the peak of Baggio, the absolute peak of Baggio, was Bologna in 1997-98. Because for me, what that meant was it was him given a complete amount of trust and love and Baggio Roberto play. I mean, there isn't anything else to say about it. He was trusted to do his thing. And to come around, to turn it around from what had happened before at AC Milan with his favourite Mr. Sacchi, to then basically convert an entire nation behind him to say, you've got to get him to the World Cup, playing for a team so outside the traditional powerhouses of Italian football, and to do so brilliantly, that for me was the essence of Baggio. The end of his career at Brescia, I know he got a bit of a cult following for when he played alongside Andrea Pirlo, for example. Everybody likes to mention that combination. But for me, it was Bologna, because it symboled what he was. He came back. He fought. You look at Baggio and you think of him as a classic number 10, a fantasista, a luxury player. Is a term I don't particularly enjoy, but it is a term that is used towards him. And the people overlook the fighting qualities he had, the mentality, the strength of character the man had to come back time and time and time again. For me, he was represented best at Bologna. So statistics is not something I think that represents the essence of Baggio. The essence of him, for me, is the fighting quality that united and people resonated with. So Bologna, I would pick out for me.
Fantastic. No, that's great. That does sum it up nicely, actually, because it takes it slightly away from the norm of a player's career to sort of highlight well, the other aspects of him, the fight, I guess. And that, to me, is a lot of what Baggio is, because he wasn't the norm. He didn't conform to the strictures of the time. And I think that comes out really starkly in the 1994 World Cup. And we're moving on to the articles now that we've all featured in. We've got Milan with Gary, Bologna. We'll get into that with you, Stephen, as well, and the legacy. The 1994 World Cup was the one that I got into. So sticking chronologically, I'll prattle on about that for a minute. But this, I think, to me, highlights just how he was out of the ordinary, a little bit out of step, I guess, with the ways and the conventions of the day. Arrigo Sacchi was, even for an Italian manager, where, you know, system can be hugely vital in those days, he was the system. You know, he couldn't really see much else. Everything was about the system. And Baggio, he was an individual. He did things his own way. He did things off the cuff. He did things unplanned and unprepared for. And that's what made him great. But that wasn't what a Sacchi team did. And so he was always slightly out of step, but he was so good and so loved at this time that he couldn't be ignored. You know, Sacchi had to find a way to bring him in. And through much of that World Cup, it wasn't really working, except for various individual moments that caused it to turn. You know, through the group stage, Italy were not good. They lost to Ireland and were pretty poor. They had a man sent off against Norway. And of course, who does he take off when he needs 10 men sticking very rigidly to the system to save them? He takes off the individual. He takes off Baggio. And yes, there were issues about his fitness as well. But I think that's a convenient excuse, personally, because he needed a system. And it's understandable to some extent in a game like that, when you're down to 10 men for the vast majority of the game, as they were, needing a result, having already lost. But it speaks volumes, I think, to me, that it was Baggio that he took off. They then managed to scrape themselves out of the group and were struggling again against Nigeria. And Baggio saves them at the last to take it to extra time, and then gets the winner, and they go through against Spain in the quarterfinal again. They were having their problems, but a closely fought game. But who pops up in the last minute to win it? It's Baggio. He dominates the semi-final against Bulgaria. So they've got to a final, not really through any particular team greatness. I think it's largely through the individual moments that he provided to drag them there, or rescue them on a number of occasions, as it actually was. Get themselves to a World Cup final. And when it came to it at the very end and the very last, you know, he was half a player at this point, because he was struggling with thigh injuries and ankle injury as well, I think. So, you know, he was struggling in the Pasadena heat as well of the afternoon. Everybody was out on their feet, really. But it came to the very last, that last kick, and he couldn't save them just one more time. And that to me was it's both beautiful, and we talked about the poetry before, the artistry, sorry. It's both beautiful and tragic, all in one kick and one motion, that it ended that way. They wouldn't have got close to the final without Baggio. And what I end the piece with is talking about enduring images of Baggio, and that obviously is one. You know, it's the biggest moment of his career. It's the one that everybody, whether they know lots about football or not, if you think Baggio, that's the image that for most people is the one that comes to mind. And it's a sad image for one so great, and for someone who took them to a final that they didn't deserve really to get anywhere near, in terms of the quality of not the players on the team, but the way the team was operating. And he just jarred so much to me with Sacchi. So anyway, that's a lot of the focus of my magazine before I go on too much. But in terms of the 1994 World Cup, I mean, Gary, do you think Sacchi misunderstood him to some extent, that he was, you know, for someone so stuck on systems and rigid approaches, was it just somebody that he didn't know how to deal with, how to include properly?
I guess there's a certain amount of merit to what you're saying there, Aidan. I mean, here's a guy who rubbed up against the coach's philosophy. But 4 years earlier, he denounced himself. Steve mentioned the Czechoslovakia goal earlier, and, you know, when you announce yourself to the world and say, "Hello, world, my name is Baggio, Roberto Baggio, remember it because I'm going to be a star." And this guy was so long. And in 94, he was the guy who, whenever Italy needed, whenever the Azzurri needed a star, when they needed somebody to rescue them, when they needed somebody to drive them forward, when they needed somebody to produce a little bit of magic, there was Baggio. And, you know, I mean, the gods of football can be accursed sometimes. You know, they offer a glimpse of greatness to some people and then dash it away. Cruyff in 74, Baggio in 94 is not terribly different, in as much as an iconoclast in a team that was dominated by a system, who stood out as an individual, somebody who must defied the requirements of the coach, but also defied the coach to drop him, because this was a talent that could make, not a difference, but make the difference to winning and losing knockout games in the most prestigious tournament in world football.
And on that theme, it's the individual and the brilliance. Stephen, just something that's occurred to me as Gary was talking there is, in terms of dominance of one player on a team's progression in a tournament all the way to the final, and yes, it didn't quite win, so it's not quite the same parallels that I'm suggesting here, but to Maradona in 86 and the way he led, okay, possibly a less talented team than Italy in 94, but one that was so utterly dependent on their star man to get them all the way. Am I overplaying things? Or are the parallels to Maradona 86? And if Italy had won, would Baggio 94 be thought of in a similar way?
Yeah, there are definitely parallels there. You know, maybe towards 1990 as well, possibly more so towards 1990, given that they both fell short at the last hurdle. But, you know, again, there were slightly different plans of attack, certainly different squads. You know, Maradona took a, certainly 1990, a substandard Argentinian squad all the way to the World Cup final. He dragged that side. People will say that the 86 side was a one-man band, but there was some decent players in that squad. They're never going to win a World Cup without him, but, you know, they're still going to go into the quarterfinals or so. That Italian side in 94 was packed with brilliant players, but this was akin to, I don't know, one of those classic Dutch squads that hits the self-destruct button and then still gets all the way to within a penalty kick or two of winning the World Cup. That's kind of what he did for that Italy squad in 94. You know, there were, you know, all manner of dysfunction going on. And the fact that, you know, his relationship with all of his coaches, the vast majority of them, you know, have a strikingly similar theme, is that there's that volatility between the two. There's that distrust of the type of player that Baggio is and where he fits into the template of the stereotypical Italian side and formation and lineup. But then the fact that he's just too good to ignore. You know, he had this with Sarri at both club and international level. You know, you can point to his difficulties with Marcello Lippi, even at Bologna. You know, Renzo Olivieri. Again, you know, there was a reticence from Olivieri. He would drop him from time to time in some of the bigger games, and then Baggio would come back at him. You know, and basically prove himself over and over and over again to these coaches that, you know, just couldn't make sense of this player. You know, there was never any doubt in his ability, but there was an unease because he wasn't Italian enough for the classical Italian coaches. But then to go and do what he did in 94 was you know, the ultimate proof in his ability, and the fact that, you know, when Baggio says he was right, he was right.
That's what you want from your great stars, isn't it, though? Now, obviously, this World Cup ended with a penalty flying high into the Pasadena sky and the Brazilians celebrating, not the Italians. Now, for Baggio, as an individual, Andrew, and this, we've talked about strength of character already in terms of his moves, particularly the Fiorentina to Juventus one. But, you know, the strength of character required to cope with this is, well, I can't even comprehend it. I mean, how damaging was that miss on his career? How did this affect him, do you think?
I don't think many players, if any, would have been able to carry on in the way that Baggio did afterwards. So I think, you know, if you put such, like you say, it isn't career defining, but it is an iconic moment, not for the most pleasant reasons, but it is an iconic moment that can define players in two different ways. For Baggio, this might sound a little strange, but honestly, I don't think in his mind it actually mattered that much. In the sense that whether he scored or missed, it was part of his path. He had a vision beyond just individual moments and accolades. I think the reason why he was able to cope with such a potentially shattering moment is that he was almost otherworldly. I don't mean in a bizarre sense, but simply he removed himself from the obsession at the time that was growing and growing and growing. Remember, this is an era. This was a time when Serie A ruled the world. This is when Italy was the pinnacle of football. And players were becoming noticed for more than just simply being the best player at the club, but they were personalities. I mean, Baggio wasn't part of that. He wasn't part of that mood. We've talked already about, from a tactical point of view, how he wasn't a true Italian player in the sense that he didn't obey the system, but his personality as well. I will always put this way and above everything else about a player, no matter who we're talking about, whether it's Baggio or someone else. The mentality of a player defines them, because that's how they cope with the success as well as the potential critical failures. This wasn't a critical failure for him. It was, he had literally done everything he possibly could. And one penalty kick would destroy other people. It didn't destroy Baggio. It just said he moved on. He did move on. Did it destroy his career? No. I don't think, honestly, we could say that. A far more important part that not destroyed his career, but changed the path of his career was, like we've alluded to earlier, was the arrival of Del Piero. And not just the arrival of Del Piero, the choice of Del Piero. This is the player we're going to form our attack around. I mean, it almost sounds sacrilegious to say this when you've got literally the best player in the world, the Ballon d'Or winner. This is the most, he broke the record for most expensive player in the world, and you're still choosing someone else over him. That alone, without the penalty kick miss, that could destroy someone's confidence, not Baggio. So it is the moment and I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think it's a wrong thing to focus on the penalty miss as a key critical moment. But actually, I actually think the opposite is true. I don't think in his mind he looked at it as a key moment, because he's still Baggio. He's still the same person. His determination got him through that. Other people would have focused on what it meant on the pitch, what the legacy meant in terms of the trophies won or lost. Honestly, I don't think that was the key moment for him. It's what everybody else remembers of him. But for Baggio, the player, for his career, I don't think that was the key.
Brilliant. All right, well, this is why you wrote the legacy piece, Andrew. You've got the best view on this. I love the phrase otherworldly about him, because that's fantastic, because yes, you can see that any number of ways, can't you? That in terms of just pure talent, you know, most people don't have that ability. But yes, the way he was able to separate himself mentally, the way he conducted himself, you know, he was alone. I mean, this is a lot of what the case was in 1994. Everyone else was celebrating away after the semi-final. He was sat separately on his own, worrying about his leg injuries and thinking he might not be involved and whatever. But he was separate from everybody. And that wasn't just on that occasion. That was throughout that time in 94 and in many other cases as well. He was just different, different to everybody. And when it comes to World Cup penalties, just to come back to that, I don't think I've ever wanted an Italian to score a penalty any more than I did when he took the one in 1998 in their opening game against Chile. And I desperately wanted him to score that, even if I deeper down wanted Chile to win the game, just because, you know, it would be nice to see somebody else get through for a change. When he was stepping up for that, oh God, I wanted him to score. And I was so pleased that he did. Anyway, we'll come to the articles that you guys have written now. So Milan was his next move, and Gary, now this is what you've focused on in your piece. So it was 1995, as Andrew was talking about there. He was eased out, I guess, of Juventus because of the choices they made to stick with or to build around the young prospect Alessandro Del Piero. And not a bad choice, I guess, going forward for Juventus of how that worked out. So for them, I guess you could say it might have been a good decision. No, Baggio joined AC Milan at this point. So I guess, firstly, what prompted you to focus on this one? What was it about this period that you particularly felt that you wanted to get across? And what was it that you focus on in your piece? That and I guess it must have been a very difficult time for him for a number of reasons. You know, we talked about the issues of 94, then the issues of not being chosen, by Juventus, despite his stature, and coming off what still was a fairly successful spell at Juventus. So, you know, a very difficult time for him. So, Milan, Gary, over to you.
Yeah, well, I think with the issue with Del Piero, I mean, people often describe these sort of things as a passing on of the baton. Well, this wasn't a passing on of the baton. This was snatching the baton out of Baggio's hands and then giving it to Del Piero, where Baggio's going, what the hell is going on here, guys? I mean, you know, as you mentioned, you can understand to some extent picking a guy who's 6 or 7 years younger than Baggio as, you know, the guy you're going to invest your time and money in. But Baggio, in typical Baggio way, moved to, I mean, he was talking about going to Manchester United or Blackburn Rovers, even. This we're talking about, you know, the lots of money was floating about in the Premier League. But he went to Milan. I was persuaded to go there by Berlusconi. And Milan won Serie A by 8 clear points from Juve in second place. Now, Baggio must have enjoyed that moment massively. And, you know, he probably waved to Lippi somewhere in the distance beyond his dust in second place. Because, you know, this is a guy who was sort of, I think the Milan years were almost like a microcosm of Baggio's career, in as much as it's a fantastic highs of what he did after being discarded by Juve. And then, you know, 12 months after, he was discarded by Milan. Oscar Capello was there at the time when they won the title, and he moved on, and they appointed the Uruguayan coach Oscar Tabérez to take over. And this guy was, when as soon as he arrived at the San Siro, made this famous statement: "There is no place for poets in modern football." Now, if you're Roberto Baggio, you are Keats, you are Wordsworth, you are Shakespeare, you are a poet. You must be thinking, this guy ain't going to do me any favours. In Italian, I can't know the Italian for that, but he must have said that. You know, and very quickly, he got sort of shunted out of Milan. To be honest, it didn't last long, but after he left, Baggio didn't last that much longer afterwards. So the time he had in the San Siro was a massive high and a massive low as well. And it just epitomised what a fantastic player can do for a club, to drive them to a title, and then how quickly it can be seen to be not of value. It's a crazy situation, but that's what happened when Baggio went to Milan. That's the essence of how I sort of framed the article, because it was the amazing success and the waving of any number of fingers, whatever number you want to think is appropriate to Lippi and the Juve hierarchy, and when the black and red ribbons were tied onto the Serie A trophy, the Scudetto. But then afterwards, how quickly it fell apart. Baggio in a microcosm.
Well, you know, you're bringing us the cultural references and the nice things there. Keats, Wordsworth, Shakespeare. Stephen, you brought us Dick Dastardly. I don't know what that says about you two.
That's it. My mastermind subject matter would be the workings of Hanna-Barbera, 1966 to 1978.
We've got a broad range of cultural references here. Well, he went to Bologna next, Stephen, coming to you, because this is the article that you've wrote in the magazine. Now, his two seasons at Milan were followed just by the one season in Bologna. Now, Gary's talking there about the huge successes in his first season at Milan and the issues in the second. Bologna, you know, this was a club at the wrong end of Serie A, wasn't it? This was a team that he was, well, I guess, trying to keep in the league, stay from relegation, rather than fighting for the Scudetto, rebuilding a club as well as rebuilding, to some extent, his career, which, you know, the highs were followed by the lows, as you mentioned earlier. So I guess it's a strange destination for him, but, you know, we talk about the otherworldly nature of him. Is there something that's just right about this move in terms of resurrecting himself as a player and in perception, or if he even needed resurrecting, I guess? But what was the allure of the Bologna period for you?
Bologna offered him a path to the 1998 World Cup, basically. On leaving Milan, he had agreed to a transfer to Parma. It was all, you know, all the financial sides and aspects of it were done and dusted, and it was Carlo Ancelotti that said, you know, basically that I don't want him. There's no room for, you know, a free-flowing playmaker in not just my side, but, you know, Italian football going forward. Ancelotti's since, you know, put his hands up to say this is the biggest mistake of his career. I mean, whether I suppose Everton might rival that now, but there was this aspect of it, you know, kind of being the stepping stone to the World Cup. You know, Cesare Maldini had taken over, and, you know, the signs that he had given Baggio, and he continued to pick him at times when he wasn't a regular, you know, at club level. And he was basically given the challenge to say, look, if you're playing on a regular basis and you are in form, then there will be a place in my squad for you. You know, this was basically, you know, a black and white ultimatum almost to say, look, prove to me that you can do it. And the fact that, you know, Parma closed the door on him, suddenly had everything to prove to all directions almost. You know, he had everything to prove to Milan for the way that they'd shown him the door, everything to prove to Parma for slamming the door in his face, you know, everything to prove to Cesare Maldini to give him his place in the World Cup side. And it provoked this most magical individual season where so much of the pressure was kind of on, but also taken off him. You know, he went to Bologna with no illusions that, you know, this was a side that was going to be challenging for trophies. It was a case of keeping them in Serie A. They had a terrible start to the campaign and then came good. If they'd have had half the form that they'd had in the second half of the season, in the first half of the season, he'd have qualified. He'd have taken them into the UEFA Cup. You know, this was his greatest individual season, the most free scoring. Yes, a lot of them were penalties. But at the same time, you know, he was the heartbeat of this side. And we're talking about a Bologna side that has a proud history. You know, they won Serie A 7 or 8 times. The last time they won it was 64 in this mad playoff game against Internazionale. You know, if it's something you're unfamiliar with, you know, it needs looking up. And, you know, the match is in full on YouTube. I've sat and watched it. Meant to only watch 5 or 10 minutes of it. Ended up watching it from start to finish. Fascinating thing to watch. So, you know, this proud club in a beautiful, beautiful city, this very, very evocative stadium, you know, it kind of had everything. It ticked many, many boxes for him that I think a lot of people didn't get. They, you know, certainly not when he first moved there. But, you know, things started to tick, and some of the goals he scored were just the most beautiful. The, you know, he was back to his best. It was the slaloming goals that he would score, that propensity to be able to change direction at the twist of a heel. You know, the intelligence of his football just flowed through him. And he made this wonderful late run to a place in the World Cup squad. And, you know, I think he was the highest scoring Italian player that season. It was 22 he got in Serie A, possibly. You know, and I find it the most fascinating year of his career because, you know, he went to Bologna. You know, he shaved his head. The ponytail was gone. This was kind of like a new Baggio. Everything was, you know, renewal. And even in the end, when he left, you know, he did so not, I don't think he did so out of any kind of, I don't know, desire to win more, almost. It was the fact that I think had it been anyone other than Inter, he'd have not gone. He felt a, I don't know, a sense of duty to sign for the club that was reputedly the one he supported as a boy. You know, this magnetic pull, and there would have been this magnetic pull to go and fulfill a prophecy of playing for the club. But part of him will have known that it couldn't only end in disaster. You know, this Bologna side would strengthen again. And, you know, the following season, they'd have Beppe Signore in that side. And, you know, that lost opportunity of him teaming up with Bologna, you know, would have been the most incredible of things. But despite all of what would have been on the plate for 98-99, you know, he eventually moved on. But the I find a great deal of I don't know, satisfaction, the fact that he went to the 98 World Cup still as a Bologna player. You know, you look at the Italian list, the squad for the 98 World Cup, he's Roberto Baggio of Bologna. And, you know, to do that, you know, was I think the most wondrous season of his career.
And yeah, he went off to Inter, and there's an article about that period in the magazine too. To me, he just didn't quite look right in blue and black. It just didn't seem right. And then he went to Brescia as well after that. Now that's another, I guess, unusual choice for a club for somebody of his stature. But that's another iconic name. You think back of Brescia of early 90s, they had Georgi Hadji, didn't they? And players of that ilk. So I guess he was kind of fitting for a club like them too. And there's an article on them in the magazine as well. But coming on to you then, Andrew, you've written the article about legacy. Now, no pressure, but this is the one of all the pieces in the magazine that I'm looking forward to reading the most, his legacy. So, you know, hope you live up to that. I'm sure you will. So what is it about that theme that that appealed to you most? And obviously, without giving it all away, we all want to read the magazine. What do you see as the principal points? I know you've touched on a number of them already through this, but just how do you even go about writing about legacy of somebody such as Baggio? Because it's a complex theme.
Absolutely. To start with, where do you start? And I think that's the point. There isn't really a starting point to the legacy of Roberto Baggio. I admit I didn't go quite as in-depth as Dick Dastardly references to my literary background, should we say. You know what I did? When I sat down to start thinking about what Roberto Baggio's legacy was, I thought I need to go way, way back. Slight digression, but there is a point to this. My grandfather was a great collector of books, and he insisted from the moment I could barely speak that I read. He said, it doesn't matter what you read, just read. Absorb information, just soak it up. It's not about distilling everything into one bite-sized chunk. It's about having a mass of information, and when it comes to you, some inspiration comes to you, it will appear to you. It might not make logical sense, but it will. And that, for me, is part of what Baggio's legacy is. It will be different for so many people. And I could have started off on any possible angle. And I found a quote that kind of resonated with me because it was so simple. The thing about genius is it's impossible to define. Not that it's impossible to define for everybody, there's a different definition for everybody. So I thought the most simple way to describe him, and it does link back to that moment we mentioned, that Czechoslovakia goal in the 1990 World Cup. It is an iconic goal. But if you actually watch it back, just watch Baggio himself. He runs in a straight line. He doesn't bob and weave. He does trick opponents, but he doesn't really do an awful lot physically. He just has a clear idea in his mind, a clear path in his mind. He pretty much runs in a straight line towards the penalty box. Now, maybe that's maybe that is what the legacy of Baggio is. The genius of him is, he knows in his mind, he can see the way he's going. He can see what he wants to do. It doesn't matter if it makes sense to other people. Perhaps that is why he was so good. The way he barely faints. You know, you see people drop the shoulders. Stanley Matthews in the 1950s, he physically fooled people. Baggio didn't physically fool people. He didn't hypnotize people. He just simply, it was Baggio by himself. Baggio knew what he was doing. So the legacy for me of Baggio began with something as simple as water. Water is about the most fundamental thing in itself. You look at it, it's clear. There's nothing spectacular about it. It is everywhere. It is not unique. And yet it is the most unique thing possible because it can seep everywhere. It is a part of everything. I came across a quote from a Chinese philosopher, believe it or not, which for me summed it up the most. And I don't want to go through it because I want, you know, it's what people should look at in the magazine. And I hope they will enjoy it. But Baggio was actually a relatively simple person. He had a very, very clear vision of what he wanted, how he was going to do things. What other people really didn't actually affect him so much. The legacy was he was accessible to everyone, and yet he was on another level to everyone. He was an accessible, sociable player, and yet he was a loner. He was everything. Everybody will have a different favorite moment. Everybody will have a different part of his character, of his playing style. That's the whole point. That is his legacy. It is not one distilled moment. It is his entire career, his entire philosophy. It is well known, of course, he converted to Buddhism in my opinion, and from what it has been reported, to get him through what was a horrific start to his career when he was injured, when it could have all been over before he barely started. Perhaps that is part of it. Perhaps it's not. It doesn't matter. That's the point. Baggio's legacy could be anything. And for me, he was a simple player. He saw things the way he wanted, and he did it. It's that simple.
Wow, there you go. Well, I am even more looking forward to reading that article now, Andrew, so thanks for that. And as other greats have said, we've talked about it on other pods, where Johan Cruyff saying about simple football is what you need, but it's the hardest thing to do. And that's why players like Baggio are so great, because, yeah, you're absolutely right, that goal in 1990, he just runs straight and everybody tumbles out the way around him. But that's the magic that somebody like him can do. And if I ran in a straight line, I wouldn't get anywhere near what he did. But there you go. where do you see Gary in terms of legacy and of him purely as a player in this instance, then where do you see Baggio standing in the pantheon of great players?
That's a really good question. And yeah, I guess, you know, a lot of the world's great players are the number 10s. Shall we say inverted commas, you know, we're talking, you know, Platini, we're talking Pele, we're talking Maradona, we're talking Cruyff to some extent as well. We're talking Messi. And Baggio sort of fits in that same sort of bracket. The trouble is, when you measure it against those sort of guys, it's an awful big scale to be measured against. I think, you know, it's very interesting to hear Andrew say about Baggio's legacy, because I think what Baggio achieved and what he will be remembered for is not only what he did, but what he did in a system that didn't really tolerate that sort of talent. He was, say, an iconoclast. He was a player that demanded individual attention in a system that was all about the system. It was all about the team, about the collective, rather than individual talent. And, you know, whereas, you know, I say, Maradona and Messi and Pelé, Cruyff, they were players who were each in team that celebrated individual talents, whereas perhaps the Azzurri didn't have that same sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, some sort of appreciation of that individualistic talent that Baggio had. So perhaps that makes his legacy a little bit more valuable than perhaps you might think of in simple terms.
And Stephen, for you, do you think he got the credit he deserved at the time, or are we sort of looking back on Baggio's career with greater warmth than many possibly felt at the time?
I think he was well loved at the time, and I think that has just grown over the years. I think the fondness that people have for him, and the fact that supporters love him in a way that his coaches never did. Supporters, he fell out with supporters of previous clubs that he played for. One of the best things about Baggio was looking about how he celebrated goals against his former clubs. There was a very much an up yours aspect to it all. Especially in a Bologna shirt, I noticed. Baggio was a complex character, but I think all of those, spats that he had with previous clubs and the supporters of them, they breezed over. They adore him as much as anyone else did. Beauty with Baggio, it's not just a case of beauty being in the eye of the beholder. It's just beauty being in the eye of the observer. I support any club that he played for. I don't have an affiliation to any one particular Italian club. It's one of the best things I love about Italian football. Certainly, that peak era of Italian football is that I enjoyed it all. Whether that's Pisa struggling at the bottom of the Serie A and having the temerity to try and stay in a ruthless 18 team Serie A where four are relegated. He played in the greatest era of club football in European history, and carried himself with such a style and a lan and covered so many, eras and generations and, such an influence on players, that would come. And, when you got a player like Zinedine Zidane saying that he would never understand the concept of Baggio on the bench, says it all, because Zidane, he turned into, a reasonable player himself, didn't he? I think we loved him at the time, and I think that love has just grown.
And Andrew, for you, has there ever been a more universally loved Italian player?
I don't think it's possible. it takes somebody as unique as Roberto Baggio it's like Stephen said. I mean, there were blow-ups. There was an in-your-face attitude to his performances on the pitch, and even that would normally make stadiums explode. People just could not resist the allure of what he represented because it was different for everybody. I mean, the Italian football, let's just say, as a master of understatement, is a passionate world. The affiliations, the tribalism of football is something that we all love. We love to feel identity towards somebody. To feel identity, you need a rejection of others. You need an antithesis to others. And yet Baggio somehow managed to just rise above all of that. I don't think anybody else could really truly do that. Not because they are any lesser, just they are different. They're a different mentality, a different character. Baggio could do that. I mean, when you have played for Fiorentina, Juventus, Inter Milan, and AC Milan, and still not truly, in my opinion, not truly be nailed down to one. That in itself is a skill. Not that that's necessarily something to aspire to or a measure of your progress, of your genius, but it is something that, yet another thing that sets Baggio apart. I just don't think anybody else is capable of it. We talk about Del Piero coming in at Juventus, for example. I mean, he's about as Juventus as you could possibly get. He really is. He is a Juventus player. Baggio, yes, you can't really say he is one club's player. He's everybody's player. I don't know anybody else who can really quite claim to do that to the level that Baggio has done. So, I mean, in short, in one word, to answer your question, no. Nobody else.
He was essentially a footballing littlest hobo.
He was a footballer indeed.
Yeah, it's what he was. You know, he went everywhere and did something heroic for every team, and he left an indelible print in every colour shirt that he pulled on. He just was 1990s football, but he came before that and he lasted beyond it. You know, an incredible, incredible footballer.
Now we've gone in a bit more depth on a number of the themes, obviously, that we've more focused on in this magazine, but there are others, as I mentioned earlier. There is rise, Vicenza, Fiorentina, 1990. A bit more depth on Juventus, Inter and Brescia that we haven't really gone into fully here. But they're all covered, of course, in the magazine as well. Like I say, that is out right now. But for each of you guys, what, other than your own articles, what is it that you're most looking forward to getting into in this magazine? Now, I've nailed my colours to the mast there on Andrew's legacy piece. How about you, Gary? What is it you're really interested to have a look at?
I think there's so many, because it's such a fantastic subject in the magazine, so many great articles. But I think probably the first thing I want to read is Paul Max, Vicenza, and the start of the career. I want to take, because I don't know anything about it, I do a little bit about it, but I don't know a lot about it. And from the start of his career with that club, I think that's going to be a fascinating read. So that's the first one I'll turn to.
That's a great point. How much do we learn about reading our own magazines that, you know, we've just contributed one small chunk of?
Yeah.
And yeah, there's so
much. I always read everybody's article except my own, Aidan's. So I never read my own articles, but, you know, yeah, I say there's so many great articles in this magazine, as there are in all these Football Times mags. But for me, that will be the one I'll turn to first, Vicenza.
And how about you, Stephen?
Again, like Gary, there's so many you can pick from. This is shooting fish in a barrel. Really, it really, really is. I think probably Brescia. It's kind of that end of his career. You know, he'd left Bologna where he was loved and playing such ebullient football and back on top of his game to go and, I don't know, kind of like gamble it all away into it once again. And then off he went to Brescia, where, you know, he stayed for 4 years. You know, he kept them in Serie A. You know, it's only after he goes that they fall back to Serie B. And again, it's, you know, I think those links, we mentioned him earlier, in Giorgi Hadji having played there. And, you know, essentially, you know, the two kind of link a little bit and drawn together by that club, because Roberto Baggio was essentially the player that Giorgi Hadji could have been. You know, and so for me, you know, a fascination behind those backwaters that he played at, you know, fully looking forward to that Vicenza, you know, article, all of the articles, but yeah, Brescia as well.
Excellent. And how about you, Andrew? Any that particularly piqued your interest?
Well, I mean, Brescia was the one I was focusing on. I mean, I'm an emotional guy. Roberto Baggio is an emotional guy. So in a way, we are connected. And that's the way I'm going to look at it. And the image of him, the photo that for me will stand out for Roberto Baggio, yes, the 1994 World Cup penalty, that's the moment that everybody remembers. But the image for me is Roberto Baggio with his hair practically at its longest, standing at the corner flag at the San Siro. And it's almost as if The game should just stop now. What's the point in playing football at this point? This is a moment of Roberto Baggio standing with the number 10 on his back in the San Siro in an iconic Italian stadium where he has performed. And it's ridiculous. I should not be welling up at this. Him walking off down the tunnel at the San Siro, I'm sorry, but it just, that's the period I want to get really, I really want to see the emotion come through. I want to understand how he mentally got over the beginning of his Fiorentina career when he arrived, well, basically injured, missed the first 2 years of his career at Fiorentina, the love and faith he must have had. I really want to read that. I want to understand about Vicenza, like Gary said, because I know little about it other than the statistics and what I've read a little bit about it. I want to read it all. I want to read it all. But the Brescia part is what I'm particularly – that for me is going to symbolise something, because it's emotion. It's beauty. That's why we love the game. That's why we follow. That's why we write about this. That's why we read about this. That's why we love football. It's the emotion. You take the emotion out of it, it's nothing. It's just another statistic. Well, football's not another statistic for me. Baggio, of all people, is not another statistic. And the pure drama and romance and beauty, it all comes to just a beautiful Indian summer. And that's what I'm looking forward to the most. Not to for a second to say I'm not looking forward to every part of the magazine, because stating the obvious, I am. But if you want me to be honest, the Brescia article, that's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, there you go. If that hasn't convinced you to go out and buy it, nothing will. What a great description of it all, Andrew. Okay, well, we'll start to wrap things up there now. Just to note that this magazine, the Baggio magazine, and this is why we focus on such a great individual for all these reasons we've talked about today and more that we haven't been able to get to.
We've not even mentioned the incredible cover as well.
The artwork.
This is probably the most, I don't know, the most unique. You know, I think you know, there's no other cover quite like it. All our covers are great, but you know, this really is, you know, standard, a startling piece of art.
Well, you talk about beauty. We talk about the beauty Baggio performed on the pitch. Well, yes, the magazine is a work of art as well, regardless of what words we've put inside. The other aspects that come to it, as you say, rightly, is absolutely stunning. And yes, we've seen the cover. We haven't seen all the other art that comes inside, and there'll be plenty more great stuff in there too. But yes, it will look fabulous to add to anyone's collection, as will anyone who's missed on the Netherlands one, as I said at the start, that has been reprinted too. So get your hands on that if you haven't. So as a final question to each of you before we sign off, when you think of Baggio, when you close your eyes and imagine him, what colour shirt is he wearing? For me, it is deep azuri blue in the Pasadena sun. What about for you, Gary? What colour shirt does he have on?
Well, firstly, I'll just say I apologise to Paul Mackey's his articles on Fiorentina. It's Luke that wrote the Vicenza part, so I apologise about that. I've got to mix those up. But I'd agree, it's azuri blue, but it's azuri blue in Italian 90, the goal against Czechoslovakia.
And that's a much shinier blue, that one.
It is a slightly nice different, hue of blue. But blue is
nice. How about you, Steve? Yes. How about you, Steve?
No, I have to subscribe to that. It's, you know, it's that azure blue, most definitely. You know, he, you know, represented so many iconic club colours. But, you know, I think it's only the Italian shirt that you can really say, you know, I don't know, fully defines him. You know, the fact that he flitted from one club to the other, he found peace and tranquility eventually at the end of his career at Brescia. But yeah, it's the Italian shirt.
That's the one constant, I guess, isn't it, through his career? He moved on here, there, and everywhere. He moved, but the one thing was there.
Even down to kind of like the campaign to get him into the 2002 World Cup squad. You know, it's that Italian shirt that is just the common denominator from start to almost finish.
It's the Italian, well, are we going to get the full house?
It's the Italian shirt with 10 on the back, by the way, Aidan, as well.
Look, you know what? Boys, I'm sorry. I would love to make it all a full house, but ooh, I'm a hopeless romantic. And if you cannot be a hopeless romantic in this sport, then I just think there's no hope for you. And for me, I go back to what I mentioned just a few moments ago. It's the Brescia shirt with the chevron down the front, with his ponytail pouring out the back. It was like the tears pouring out of everybody's eyes. Is this the end? But it never can be the end, because Baggio he didn't live for trophies. He didn't live for numbers and statistics. He lived just to express himself. And I feel like he expressed himself the most artistically, the most romantically, the most purely at the end. And I'm sorry. For me, it has to be the Azzurri shirt. Of course, that is the constant. But for me, it's got to be the most romantic part. And for me, that is Brescia. So the Brescia shirt is that's how I want to remember Baggio.
Well, it's still blue, isn't it? So there we go. We'll take that.
Exactly.
All right, then. Well, we'll wrap it up there, fellas. What a fantastic chat about a fantastic player. So I hope everyone listening has enjoyed it as much as I have chatting with you guys. So thanks very much for all your contributions. Cheers, Gary.
Enjoyed it, mate. Going by the Mad Guys, because this is a classic. This is absolute classic.
Certainly is. It certainly is. You know, much more, well, specific focus than the club ones, I guess, isn't it? And all the richer for it in some aspects.
Indeed,
and Stephen, thanks to you too.
Oh, an absolute ball talking about, you know, the most wondrous Italian footballer of all time.
Quite so. And Andrew, thanks very much. Let's not leave it 3 years before you're on again.
I will make sure it isn't. What a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing this with me, boys. And what a player to share it about.
Absolutely. So, well, yes, as Gary said, go out and buy the magazine before it's too late. The sold out signs will be up before you know it. So get yourself on the website and get that ordered before it is gone. Well, thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. And do join us again next time on the Lob Podcast with These Football Times. Thank you and bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on the Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists, and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.